Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The legislature did not intend to do nothing
when it amended the Lottery Act in 1999.
To the contrary, it intended to protect consumers against predatory business practices. The act is indisputably constitutional, yet the court below refused to enforce it as written, in conflict with rulings across the country. The court below lacked jurisdiction for two separate and independent reasons. The lack of a proper defendant in this case is a relatively simple issue, so we will focus our time today instead on the second jurisdictional defect, one that precludes jurisdiction even if plaintiffs had sued a proper state official. And that's the fact that plaintiffs cannot ultimately prove a valid ultra vires claim. Under Heinrich, a plaintiff can avoid sovereign immunity only if it both alleges and ultimately proves a valid ultra vires act. After all, the only reason an ultra vires act avoids sovereign immunity is if an official's conduct does indeed fall outside of legal authority. The parties have competing statutory arguments, but it all comes down to this one central point.
Sure,
the legislature did not intend to do nothing
when it amended the Lottery
Act in 1999. So we should try to avoid, we should try to do everything we can to avoid this extreme result, unless every legal indication requires it. And in this case, all arrows actually point to enforcing the Lottery Act as written. I'll talk about the UCC text first, and then the canons of interpretation. The plaintiff's central theory is this, that 9406F of the UCC bumps out all the Lottery Act provisions.
Before 1999 and the amendment that year, did the UCC impact lottery winning, assignments of lottery winnings?
It did not.
Before 1999, it restricted assignments of contracts, but I guess there's no contract involved.
Right. I believe in 1999, the UCC went through a major overhaul, a 218-page amendment. The word account was modified as part of that.
I was trying to get in mind the status before 99, and that was that the Lottery Act restricted assignments, and the UCC did not.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And if it helps the court, let me be very clear. These statutes conflict, so one has to give way to another. The only question is which one. And if you start with the UCC text, plaintiffs talk about 9406F allegedly bumping out the protections of the Lottery Act. The problem with that argument is that 9406F is itself bumped out by another provision of the UCC, namely 9201 with regard to consumers. After all, let's remember, the core purpose of the Uniform Commercial Code is to establish a set of rules to govern commercial transactions. But the UCC also recognizes that consumers may need additional protections. And that's what 9201 makes clear. It explicitly states that when you have cases of conflict between the UCC and other statutes that deal with consumers, that the UCC must give way to the statute that establishes a different rule.
Is there
consumers.
A definition of consumer that makes this lottery purchaser governed by the act?
There is, Your Honor. It appears in 1201 B11 of the UCC. That provision defines consumer as an individual who enters into a transaction primarily for personal, family, or household reasons, as opposed to, of course, commercial for-profit reasons. And even the judges below who ruled against the commission, even they confirm what the legislative history makes clear and what policymakers nationwide understand, which is that these provisions were, of course, intended to protect consumers.
Is there anything in the records of the legislature that show that they knew that there was a conflict between these provisions passed within 2 weeks of each other?
No, we have not found, I don't think either side has found anything in the legislative history to indicate a specific intent. It's sort of ships passing in the night. What that, I think, confirms then is that when the legislature passed the amendments to the Lottery Act, it fully intended for those words to have meaning, and that when they passed the UCC, they had no specific intent to disrupt any future legislation of this kind.
So your two primary arguments, as I understand it, are that the Lottery Act amendments are more specific to this transaction at issue, and that they were passed subsequent to the UCC amendments, and therefore take precedence. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. Frankly, we don't even need to get to those canons because 9201 is so clear. But even if we didn't have 9201, we could just follow other courts around the country who have held very clearly that the specific controls the general, the canon against surplusage, both of those indications point directly towards enforcement of the Lottery Act. 9201 expressly applies to consumers and expressly applies to the entire chapter, Chapter 9, including 9406. 9201 is further bolstered by other elements of the UCC, namely UCC 1.103, comment 3, where the UCC makes very clear that courts may use, quote, other interpretive principles addressing the interrelationship between statutes. And what they mean by that is the UCC may give way to statutes that, quote, are specifically intended to provide additional protections to a class of individuals. Precisely what is going on in this case. It's essentially the UCC's own articulation of the principle that specific controls the general.
Mr. Hull, what is so specific or so significant for the state to have an interest to control the last two payments as opposed to the first two or the middle five? Why is it the last two?
Right. That is an important part of a whole schedule, a whole set of protections. But that protection in particular is designed to shield lottery winners with respect to really the two payments that are most vulnerable to exploitation, because those are going to be the ones most undervalued by lottery winners. But let's be clear, there's much more at stake in this case than even just those two years. The Lottery Act amendments in 1999 provide a number of protections: the right to independent counsel, the right to tax advice, the right to financial advice, a number of notice requirements, a 3-day cooling period, various other provisions. According to the plaintiff's theory and according to the majority below, all of those protections are wiped off the books. So it's not just the 2-year protection. The last thing I'll mention about the 2-year protection is this was not some specific or unique provision to Texas. California, for example, has a 3-year provision, and the California courts have rejected Stone Street's arguments and enforced the Lottery Act provisions in California precisely as they are written.
And the rationale behind the 2 years is just that those are the most critical or important payments to a lottery winner?
It's essentially a policy judgment by the legislature, Your Honor, to decide that those two payments are so far away, some lottery winners may be particularly vulnerable to just sort of ignoring those. And we want to make sure that they at least get something out of their lottery prize.
They're also discounted the greatest, aren't they?
Precisely. Now, because 9201 expressly bumps out 9406, you really don't need any canons of interpretation. You can just sort of resolve the case right there. But in any event, the canons simply reinforce precisely the same conclusion that we've already reached in any event, and as other courts in other states have already held. We begin with the canon against surplusage. The canon against surplusage, of course, is the principle that you shouldn't lightly read a few words out of a statute. Every word should have meaning. Well, this canon has special force in this context, because what we're talking about here is not just reading a few words out of a provision. We're not even talking about reading a whole statutory section out of the law. We're talking about essentially reading an entire act of the legislature out of the law. Relatedly, there's the canon of the specific controlling the general. The obvious question you have to ask when you invoke this canon is, which provision is the specific one and which provision is the general one? And what you do, what this court has made clear, is you interpret both statutes in a manner that allows both statutes to have effect, to have at least some effect. The specific provision would then simply be a carve-out, an exception to the general provision. under the ruling below, there would be nothing left to the Lottery Act. In fact, the ruling below couldn't be clear. They're essentially writing those provisions off the books.
Mr. Ho, I know you're saying that 406 is bumped out by 201. The state also arguing, I saw in a footnote that there's an argument, maybe subsidiary, that Article 9 doesn't apply at all because the assignment was undertaking to satisfy a pre-existing debt. Is the state still contending, making that argument, or how does that sort of, what's the interplay between that and what you're arguing today?
We do argue that. That is a narrower way of addressing just the factual issues in this case. We presume that the court took this case because you want to address the broader issues, but that would resolve this specific transaction. So with respect to the specific controls, the general.
Can I stop you there just a minute? What is the pre-existing debt?
The pre-existing debt is the fact that Irvin, as I understand the transactions here, Irvin had a substantial debt to the First State Bank of DeQuoin.
That was incurred after he won the lottery.
Correct.
And so the lottery was owed as of the time he won the lottery. All of those payments were owed as of the time he won the lottery.
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
Well, when else would they become owed? He only won it one time, right?
Right. Our submission on this argument that Justice Willett referred to is this. The reason Irvin entered into this selling of the last two payments is because he owed First State Bank of DeQuoin a sum of money.
But it has to be pre-existing, is what I'm saying. You're saying he incurred the debt after he won the lottery and after he was owed all this money from the lottery. So how can it be pre-existing, the account? It has to be, he incurred the debt after he won the lottery. I don't see how it's pre-existing.
Well, we're happy to focus, I think, on our broader argument in any event.
Okay.
Your Honor. So under the ruling below, the 1999 Lottery Act would have no effect whatsoever. Whereas under our approach, 406F would still have a wide range of applications. It would still apply to non-consumer statutes, it would apply to past statutes, it would apply to the lotteries of other states.
But if you take that position, isn't it a matter of the legislature passing any law and then saying that the UCC provision simply becomes subject to any specific law so that it becomes a nullity in effect, does it not?
The UCC would not become a nullity.
Every time they pass a specific statute, we say, well, this specific statute, we'll just say that it's not covered by the UCC general language, and that just leaves that language out there, and every time they pass a statute, it doesn't count.
If you're in a situation where the statutes irreconcilably conflict, then yes, one has to give way to the other. Our primary submission is that 9201 makes this case quite straightforward, because 9201 tells you 9406 doesn't apply at all. In fact, nothing in Chapter 9 applies to this context. But even if you get past 9201, you just go to what these other courts, California, Virginia, what other courts have done, and they've invoked these canons to reconcile the conflict, to avoid surplusage, and to favor the specific provision.
The problem with the argument, though, is the UCC expressly addresses lottery winnings, and then you say takes it out because it's a consumer transaction, but lottery winnings would never be, in your view, other than a consumer transaction. So it's curious why the UCC would say, we specifically cover lottery winnings, but we don't cover any consumer transactions, which a lottery winning is.
And if I can add to that, and then says any statute to the contrary is ineffective. 406F1, a rule of law, statute, or regulation that prohibits or restricts the assignment or transfer of an account, including state lottery prizes, is ineffective.
Well, the word lottery in the UCC would still have substantial effect. It would have effect in every respect so long as it doesn't bump into a consumer protection.
Well, so when would that be?
Any number of transactions involving lottery payments sort of downstream, for example, might be one situation. Lotteries of other states.
What do you mean by downstream?
I can imagine a situation where after this transaction, let's take a lottery of another state, because the provision in the UCC doesn't apply to just Texas lottery, it applies to any state. if a transaction were valid and they wanted to flip it to another financial entity, as I believe they want to do, that would the UCC provisions would continue to have effect. I see that my time is up.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Ho. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court. Mr. Boyd will present argument for the respondents.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court and Solicitor General, if I may just briefly acknowledge Max Tarbox is in the courtroom. He represents Mr. Urban's bankruptcy trustee. Drove down from Lubbock to be here, and I didn't want his presence to go without mention. The Uniform Commercial Code clearly provides that accounts are fully assignable, specifically defines accounts to include lottery winnings, and then expressly declares that any law that prohibits or limits the assignment of account is ineffective. Because of that, there are really...
Follow up on the line of questioning that just ended, then why would the legislature do that and in the same session turn around and put these restrictions in the Lottery Act?
Your Honor, there are really probably two possibilities here, and I'll acknowledge a potential third. The two possibilities are this. Either the legislature specifically intended to render the Lottery Act provisions ineffective, or the legislature made a mistake. Now, we from the beginning in this case have been willing to assume that the latter is the case.
But don't we, if we can read them together and give them both effect, it seems like we're supposed to do that. And there is a way to read these two together without rendering ineffective the language in the UCC.
There's not. There's no way to render both of the, there's no way to give full effect to both of these statutes.
Well, but it could still be effective as to out-of-state lottery winnings, as Mr. Ho said. And so there are still things that would apply to that wouldn't make it meaningless.
No, it would be meaningless as applied to Texas lottery winnings. And so you would be rendering ineffective the UCC provisions as applied to Texas lottery winnings. Now, the argument that you should construe it to apply only to other states' lottery winnings is completely illogical. Texas law cannot govern the assignability of Indiana lottery winnings any more than Indiana law could ever govern the assignability of Texas lottery winnings. There's no way that some law that some other state passes could govern whether or not a person could assign Texas winnings.
And is that why full faith and credit was not an issue up here?
Is not an issue here. So the two possibilities, we've acknowledged it could potentially be a mistake here. Now let me mention the third potential one. It's a bit of more of a stretch, but it's actually the most logical. And that is because the UCC was expressly made effective July 1, 2001, as opposed to the Lottery Act made effective September 1, 1999, it could have been that the intent was to make that restriction on assignments effective for 2 years, but thereafter no longer effective, because that's how the law was between September 1, 1999, July 1, 2001, when the UCC came into effect. But let's assume that wasn't the case and it was actually a mistake, two ships passing in the night. Even if that's the case, and this I think will be the most important thing I say today, although it is at least theoretically possible that legislators, like judges or anyone else, may make a mistake, that does not give this court the power, as the United States Supreme Court has stated, to legislate to fill any hiatus that Congress may have left. That, of course, is a direct quote from this court's opinion in Brown v. De La Cruz in 2004.
Well, but, you know, of course, if we don't think the legislator made a mistake, we can follow the analysis by Justice Jan Patterson there, when she said you can get both of these effect by having a carve-out. I mean, you can do the assignments up to the last two.
Justice Medina, the problem with Justice Patterson's analysis is that she completely ignored 9406F. This is not a case where you have one law that says you cannot do X, and you have another law that says you can do X, and now the court has to figure out which of the two to enforce. Rather, this is a case that says you cannot do X, and the second law says you can do X, and then 9406F, any law that says you can't do X is ineffective. The statute's own language resolves that conflict, and Justice Patterson, read her dissent, never discussed 9406F. The real issue in this case is what is the role of this court?
Can I ask you your understanding of the UCC before 1999? They had a very abbreviated provision in 9318, and it just applied to contracts. So would that not restrict, that would not impact lottery winnings or
it would not, Your Honor. It did not, it would not.
So before 1999, the Lottery Act restricted assignments on winnings and the UCC did not.
That's correct. With the limitation for under 466-406A, which was adopted in 1991 of the government code, which allowed for the payment to be made to a different party under an appropriate judicial order.
So that was always in the Act?
That was always in the Lottery Act. 1999 is when all of this occurred. Now, this court has repeatedly answered the key question in this case, and that is that it's not the role of the courts to decide what it thinks the law should be or to fix what the legislature may have gotten wrong, to do anything other than to apply the law that the legislature has written, even if the legislature's made a mistake.
The problem, counsel, that the laws the legislature have written are not so clear in this instance. Let me ask you about the UCC 9.102A2. It defines account, and this is the only place where it mentions lottery winnings, subsection 8. And so lottery winnings are mentioned in the context of defining account. Now, where in 9.406F does that definition of account get incorporated into your position? I'm looking at 9406F, and I'm looking for account. It says 9406F1 refers to account debtor, but I don't see account.
9406.
You assume account means account and debtor's just an extra word added there, or is account debtor the term that is defined, should be defined in 9406F?
Well, account debtor is defined, but no, 9406F, Your Honor, if that's what you're asking about, specifically says that except as otherwise provided, blah, 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 and there's some exceptions that no one's ever argued are applicable here, and subject to subsections H and 1, a rule of law, statute, or regulation that prohibits, restricts, or requires the consent of the government, governmental body, or official, or account debtor to the assignment or transfer of, and then dot, 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 an account. That's where any rule of law that restricts or prohibits the assignment of an account is ineffective. Then you get to the little sub paragraph, to the extent it restricts or prohibits the assignment of an account. The Lottery Act prohibits or restricts the assignment of an account, and 406F therefore expressly declares that law to be ineffective. Now,
why is the Lottery Act not a consumer law?
The Lottery Act, you know, Your Honor, there are at least 8 rabbit trails that the state has presented for this court. And that jurisdiction is the first probably to address, although the last written, consumer is the second one. When you ask that question about whether this is a consumer issue, we're dealing with 9.201B of the UCC. 9.201B of the UCC says a transaction subject to this chapter, Article 9 of the UCC, is subject to any law that establishes a different rule of law for consumers. The Lottery Act does not establish a different rule of law for consumers. It's as Justice Medina wrote in the Marks case in August of this year, when we're looking at this language, we start by using the definitions prescribed by the legislature. What did the legislature mean when it talked about transactions subject to a different rule of law for consumers? In arguing that that applies here, the state does not cite to the Lottery Act because the Lottery Act never refers to lottery winners as consumers. It doesn't cite to the
deal. Clearly, those provisions in the Lottery Act are to protect, I mean, the lottery winner is a consumer in that sense.
It's not, Your Honor. It is to protect lottery winners. Now, let me drop a footnote here, and because it was asked earlier, I think Justice Johnson, about the protection on the prohibition on the last 2 years' payments. And Mr. Ho described to you all the reason for that. I suppose he thinks that's the case, but he can't point to anything anywhere that tells you. I think it is probably more likely that was the intent behind the prohibition on the absolute prohibition on the last 2 year payments was to protect the interests of the state because of tax liabilities, child support obligations, and otherwise. That's as logical of a supposition for the legislative intent for that prohibition as protecting lottery winners. But even if it was all intended to protect lottery winners, that is not a law that protects consumers. They're never referred to as consumers in any law, and in fact, they are not consumers under any definition you can find. They don't cite the DTPA because a consumer under the DTPA is one who seeks or acquires goods or services. Lottery winners who assign their winnings do not seek or acquire goods or services.
Well, they do seek some type of benefit, though, by the assignment, and that could be the, a service.
No, they sell a right. They are the seller, not the buyer. They are the one who receives the benefit of the obligation. They are not the one who incurs the obligation.
Your position is that under Texas law, they are can never be classified as a consumer, but simply as lottery winners?
I am saying that under the terms of the Lottery Act, and more importantly under the UCC, they are a lottery winner who clearly are intended to be protected. But the real question here is, are they consumers as the UCC uses that term in Article 9?
Does UCC define the term consumer?
UCC Article 102, Article 1, defines it as someone who enters into a transaction for primarily personal, family, or household purposes. But then you go to 9.102A22, defines a consumer debtor as a debtor in a consumer transaction. And then you go to subsection 26, a consumer transaction. And remember, what they rely on is the statement that a transaction subject to this chapter, Article 9, is subject to any law that establishes a different rule of law for consumers. What is a transaction involving a consumer? 9102A26, a consumer transaction is one in which an individual incurs an obligation secured by a security interest for personal, family, or household purposes. If I go buy a vehicle and I take a note on that vehicle and allow that vehicle to secure that debt, I am engaged in a consumer transaction. I've incurred an obligation to secure my obligation, I have placed the good up as collateral. The purpose and effect of that is to protect those consumers.
Those are very compelling arguments there. How do you classify someone that participates in other games of chance, going to a horse track and you're buying a ticket to win? Is that not a consumer at that point? And if it is, when does that stop?
Your Honor, we can't confuse the transactions here. The transaction at issue here is not the purchase of the lottery ticket. The transaction at issue here is the assignment of the right to receive the future payments. That's the transaction that the UCC governs. That's the transaction that the UCC says may be freely made, and that any law that purports to restrict or prohibit that is ineffective. It's as Justice Hecht wrote in concurring in the Entergy case, it matters not what someone thinks the text may have meant to say. The Solicitor General and this court may think that the legislator may have meant to call lottery winners consumers. They're not consumers under any definition because they don't incur an obligation, they don't purchase, they don't seek or acquire to purchase. They're not consumers.
Under 9102A, what specific number defines consumer?
It's 1201B11. So it's not in this chapter to which 9201 on which they rely applies. The general 1201B consumers and individual enters in a transaction primarily for personal, family, or household purposes. But they're relying on Article 9. And for purposes of Article 9, a consumer transaction is not this transaction because the lottery winner is not seeking to acquire or incurring an obligation. So we must use the definitions that the legislature has provided.
Let's go back to 9406F. I see account there, an account debtor. F says that some exceptions that are not applicable, as you pointed out, that a statute that prohibits, restricts, or requires the consent of a government to the assignment or transfer of an account or chattel paper is ineffective to the extent the rule of law, statute, or regulation. Then there's some provisions that define what to the extent means. The restricting definition here says, to the extent the rule of law or statute prohibits or restricts or requires the consent of the government or account debtor to the assignment or transfer. Explain how F1, 406 F1, specifically subsection 1, fits within your argument.
Well, because 9406 F1 says, a rule of law that does X is ineffective to the extent it does X. It repeats the exact same language in the subsection to which you've referred. A rule of law that restricts or prohibits or requires the consent of the government to the assignment of an account is ineffective to the extent that it restricts or prohibits or requires the consent of the government to an account. It repeats itself, but it's not ambiguous because it's very clear. If there is a law that requires the consent of the government or prohibits or restricts the assignment of an account, then it is ineffective. And so it is ineffective to the extent it does exactly what the statute says. The realities in this case are this.
And what was the consent of the government that was required here?
Well, there was no consent of the government required by law.
Which is why I wonder why one applies.
Because
it says that it applies to the extent, as you said, it requires the consent of the government.
No.
Or did you mean
something else?
Rule
of law that restricts or prohibits or requires the consent of the government to an assignment is ineffective to the extent it does so. We're not arguing that the Lottery Act requires the consent of the government. We're arguing that the Lottery Act restricts and prohibits the assignment of an account.
Okay, so you read subsection 1. The first word there, prohibits, then you skip the words in between and go to the assignment.
Well, that's so exactly the object of the verb in that. Yes, Your Honor.
I'm not sure. It's a fairly complicated dependent clause here, but that's how you read it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Prohibits the assignment.
That's right.
Or transfer.
Prohibits, restricts, or requires the consent of the government for an assignment or transfer.
Let me take you to the argument that the later enacted statute prevails. What's your view of that?
Your Honor, first our response is you don't get to those extrinsic aids when the statute's unambiguous. Let's assume that you get to that extrinsic aid. The UCC is the later enacted in this case. Now, if we look at 1999, it is not. By a span of 13 days, it is not the later enacted. But to answer this question, you don't look at 1999, you look at 2001. Four things happened in 2001 that show that the UCC was the later enacted. The first is that the UCC became effective as per the 1999 rule. When they adopted it in 1999, they said the effective date is in 2001. So in July 1st of 2001, the UCC became effective. But number two, the legislature in 2001 reenacted 9.406F. They passed a law expressly.
They only changed F2, right?
That's right. But they reenacted all of 9406F. They reenacted 9406F1 and 2. If you look at the bill, you'll see it. Both of them are stated. Now, the state argues, well, they only did that because of the constitutional prohibition on blind amendments. It doesn't matter. The question is not the later amended statute governs. The rule is the later enacted statute governs. If the legislature wanted to change 9406F1, they could have changed it right then and there. They didn't. They reenacted it in 2001, thereby reaffirming that any law that prohibits or restricts the assignment of an account is ineffective. The third thing...
You define enactment as pegged to what date? To presentment and signature, to...
Well, the Code Construction Act, Your Honor, defines enactment, and the first thing you look at is the date that the vote was taken. In 1999, we were 13 days early. UCC was 13 days early.
Mr. Boyd, before you get to your third issue you wanted to conclude with, Mr. Ho indicated that other states or other courts agree with their interpretation. Could you address that? Is there anything different about those cases?
Absolutely. There are seven decisions out there. Three of them are analogous to this. Four of them are not. In Indiana, it was an agreed order that the UCC prevails. In Massachusetts, the Lottery Act expressly, contrary to Texas, the Lottery Act expressly states that it prevails over the UCC. In New Hampshire, the Lottery Act does the same. And then in Illinois, the assignment occurred 2 years before the UCC was adopted. Those four are not analogous. The three that are analogous are California, which held that the Lottery Act controls because it's more specific, an argument I haven't been able to get to today but is briefed. Second was Virginia, which held that the Lottery Act prevails. This is key, look at Virginia. The Lottery Act prevails because it was later reenacted. And we're arguing here the UCC prevails because it was later reenacted in 2001. And then Kentucky held that the UCC prevails because it was later enacted. Those are the only three that are analogous. The third thing that happened in 2001 was that the legislature amended the definitions in the UCC. Did not touch the definition of account. Did not say it no longer includes lottery winnings. But then the fourth thing is they also amended 9.309 to specifically show that account does include lottery winnings. So in 2001, the latest statement of the legislature on this issue, the legislature confirmed that accounts include lottery winnings and that all accounts are freely assignable and any law that purports to restrict or prohibit that assignment is ineffective. In closing, Your Honor, in the end, it comes down to a question of whether this court is going to legislate or be a court. You cannot enforce both statutes. One must be expressly determined to be at least partially ineffective. One of these statutes expressly declares the other one is ineffective, and that should end the court's inquiry, and the court should enforce the law exactly as the legislature has written it.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. Are there any further questions?
I just have one quick question. Does your view hamper the Attorney General's ability to enforce child support orders?
They have proposed that it would, and that's where I get to my point about the purpose for the restriction prohibition on assignment of the last two payments probably has a lot more to do with protecting the state than the lottery winners, because the argument is we need to have those last two payments available to go collect child support payment from lottery winners if we need to. We don't want them to be able to assign that off and take it out of our reach. That may in fact have this effect, but the simple answer to that is if the legislature doesn't like that, then as a policy matter,
I just wanted to see
law.
If you agreed that it could have that effect.
Any further questions?
Nothing further, Your Honor. Thank you,
Mr. Boyle.
Mr. Hill, you may be kind of constrained in how you answer this, but your opening presentation, you mentioned how these statutes conflict and one has to give way to the other. When you have two state statutes that clash head on, how exactly does the Attorney General's office determine which one gives way to the other?
Well, I think I would answer the question this way, Your Honor. There's an easy way and a hard way to decide this case. I think the easy way is to look at 9201, which talks about consumers, not consumer debtors, not anything else. It talks about consumers. And consumers defined in UCC 1201B11. Counsel has argued that 1201B11 is in Chapter 1, not Chapter 9. Fine, but Chapter 1, this definition, applies to the entire title. It applies to the entirety of the UCC.
But it doesn't seem to fit Irvin, even so.
Well, let's ask two questions. Why did he buy the lottery ticket, and why did he get into this loan arrangement, the assignment? Was it for personal, family, or household reasons, as 1201B talks
what is
about?
The obligation, though, that because it does say an individual incurs an obligation primary. What is the obligation that was incurred here, primarily for personal, family, or household purposes?
He has said he wants to give away these two final payments in exchange for payments right away. And so, under 1201B11, the question is simple: is he a consumer? Is he entering into this transaction? Clearly a transaction. Is he entering into it for personal, family, or household reasons?
Again, what is the obligation?
The obligation is to assign the last two payments.
So you're calling the assignment the obligation?
Correct. Is he doing it for personal reasons, or is he doing it for commercial reasons? We would submit he's doing it clearly for personal reasons. That's the easy way to decide the case. More difficult is to engage 9406F.
Does the argument hinge on us finding him to be a consumer?
It doesn't. We would submit that there are so many occasions pointing in favor of just enforcing the Lottery Act as amended that that any of these arguments would alone suffice. But we do think that 9201 quite convincingly applies to consumers and quite convincingly applies to this case.
I don't recall seeing an answer in your brief to the last point that Mr. Boyd made on the timing, the 2001 enactment of 9309.14 says a sale of an individual on an account that is a right to payment of winnings of a lottery or other game of chance immediately takes effect.
To be candid, I think both sides agree that the last in time rule is sort of the weakest of all the canons. We have arguments on both sides in the briefs, but we agree with them that text governs, and then the other canons are frankly stronger. 9406F, with respect to this issue of the other states, I'll just note that this is precisely what the federal court in Illinois concluded. Justice Medina, you asked about other courts. If you just look at the logic of the Virginia ruling, just look at the logic of a California ruling, as well as the logic of the Illinois ruling, the logic is devastating. There is no way they would win if they were in those courts. At the end of the day, this is a conflict. Something has to give way. And the touchstone of interpretation, as this court repeatedly has said, is legislative intent. So let's consider this. Let's consider the story that plaintiffs are basically asking you to accept, that the legislature in 1999 introduced a number of amendments to the Lottery Act, that they held multiple hearings on this bill. They amended the bill to further strengthen consumer protections. They even convened a conference committee when the House and the Senate couldn't agree. And then finally, they enacted the bill as amended. Yet according to plaintiffs, all of this work, all this time, energy, and activity in the legislature was only because the legislature intended to do absolutely nothing.
No, that's not what he said. He said it was a mistake. They may have intended that, but they just made a mistake, and we have to take the words as we read them.
That is absolutely true, Your Honor. 9201, we submit, makes clear that they did not make a mistake. 9201 talks about consumers. As Your Honor noted earlier, we have a very strong argument that this is precisely a consumer protection provision. No ordinary citizen reading the 1999 amendments to the Lottery Act could fathom that they would not be enforced as written, and we ask the court not to fashion such a result either. Accordingly, the judgment below should be vacated for want of jurisdiction for two reasons. First, because they have not sued a proper defendant, and second, if the court wishes to reach this issue, because plaintiff's ultra vires claim is invalid in any event.
Thank you, Mr. Ho. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.